Support for the Source Podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're entering a phase of attacks on medical science that puts many of us, if not all Americans, at risk. There is anti-science, anti-vaccine propaganda, disease denialism, rejection of proven data, disinformation spread on social media, the elevation of quackery and unproven treatments, and public attacks on leading scientists and researchers. And now we have the nomination of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. President-elect Donald Trump is saying he will nominate him for Health and Human Services Secretary. Dr. Peter Hotez has clashed with Kennedy in the past and is warning about his selection. Dr. Hotez is the co-director of the Texas Children's Hospital Center for Vaccine Development. He's a professor of pediatrics and molecular virology at Baylor College of Medicine, and he is the dean of that institution's National School of Tropical Medicine. He's also the author of the new book, The Rise of Deadly Anti-Science, A Scientist's Warning. And Dr. Peter Hotez, welcome to The Source.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. Good to be in San Antonio.
Our phone lines are open. If you have a question or a comment, we want to hear from you. Give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. So, Dr. Hotez, tell me about your background. How do you know Robert F. Kennedy Jr.?
Well, I'm a pediatrician and a vaccine scientist based at Baylor College of Medicine, Texas Children's Hospital, where we make low-cost vaccines for global health. We make vaccines for parasitic infections, including hookworm anemia. We made a low-cost COVID vaccine with no patent, minimizing strings attached, that was administered to 100 million people in India and Indonesia. And we provide a proof of concept that you don't have to be a big pharma company to do big things in the vaccine space. And that was very important. The other side of it is I also have four adult kids, including Rachel, who has autism and intellectual disabilities. And the reason that's relevant is if you remember the original assertion against vaccines, in part led by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., was false claims that vaccines cause autism.
Right, and you also wrote a book
about
that. And
I wrote a book called Vaccines Did Not Cause Rachel's Autism, which wound up making me public enemy number one or two with anti-vaccine groups. And so I began my association with Mr. Kennedy. I was asked to have conversations with him by the National Institutes of Health in 2017 when he came out and said that President Trump in the first term was going to appoint him head of a special vaccine commission, and began a long series of discussions with him.
So you're familiar with his claims that he has said that there is no safe vaccine. That's what he has said.
Yeah, and he's wrong, and he's, you know, in my discussions with him, I realized he's wrong about just about everything about vaccines, and he doesn't really understand the vaccine science and is not really interested in understanding the science, and just makes a series of assertions that he can't support, and then just keeps on moving the goalposts. And so this is what we've been dealing with, not just with Mr. Kennedy, but with the anti-vaccine lobby, because they keep on shifting what their actual concern or complaint is. And the original complaint in 1998 was a paper that was written in The Lancet, a British medical journal, claiming it was the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine that caused autism. That was debunked through large studies, and the original study claiming the association was shown to be fraudulent. Then Mr. Kennedy in 2005 wrote an article in Rolling Stone magazine claiming that it was the thimerosal preservative that was in vaccines that was doing it, and that was debunked, shown not to be the case. And that required a lot of work. Those were large cohort studies, sometimes with hundreds or even thousands of kids, showing that kids who got the vaccines were no more likely to acquire autism than kids who didn't, et cetera. Then it was shifted again. We were spacing vaccines too close together. Then it was alum in vaccines. And I call it vaccine whack-a-mole. You mean you knock one down, another one pops
up. That just shows
you
the unfairness of they can say anything they want. They don't have to put any data out there. He just here's his next complaint, and then the scientists go do the science. That takes time, effort, and money. to respond to that, and then the results are dismissed.
That's right, and he's got now a pretty well-oiled machine in his anti-vaccine organization, Children's Health Defense, and allied organizations around it. And let's face it, they have the bandwidth. They dominate the internet. They dominate social media, and the scientists, you know, do the best that we can and to debunk it. And I've been out there. I wrote the book about my daughter, which not only goes into the science showing there's no link between vaccines and autism, but even then, that's not enough, because then parents would reasonably turn around and say, "Okay, doc, if it's not the vaccine, what is it?" And I explain the genetics of autism, how we have 100 genes involved in autism, and including we discovered Rachel's autism gene as well, which is similar to the others, are involved in early fetal brain development while the baby, even before the baby's born, and they're involved in connections between neurons, which makes a lot more sense than something like a vaccine. And now we have even more studies that have gone beyond that. So the link between vaccine and autism is about as dead as you can as it can be in terms of the science. But again, the anti-vaccine guys dominate the information.
But it used to be that there were these people that would come up with this this argument, and we would just be able to throw them into the crackpot in category and not have to worry about that. But now we have the elevation of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. potentially to the Secretary of Health and Human Services, where, I mean, what would he be able to do in that position given if he gets through the nomination process? But what would he be able to do?
Well, that's a good question. I don't think the system has ever been tested in terms of how much. We never had to deal with a situation where someone would inflict that kind of damage and harm before. So I think it's kind of untested what kind of legal challenges could be mounted and everything else. And unfortunately, some of the other picks for the agencies share a lot of his viewpoints, you know, at CDC, at the National Institutes of Health, at FDA. And so it's not just the Health and Human Services appointments, it's the agencies. And we don't know what kind of cuts they're going to go the next level down. And so, you know, are we going to lose all of our technical expertise? So a lot of unknowns at this point.
So given the worst case scenario, we could see increased, problems to our public health. People could suffer. People could die.
Well, a few things. One, I think, you know, the CDC collects a lot of information about vaccine-preventable diseases. And if we're, you know, will there be an effort to obscure the data? So that's one of the things that we're concerned about. You know, will we have, let's say there is an H5N1 acceleration or big increase in measles outbreaks, and we've already seen a rise. We've gone from 4 to 15 measles outbreaks this year. Now, will that continue? We've gone from we've had a five-fold rise in pertussis cases over the last
year. So things could get worse.
Year. So things could get worse.
And we wouldn't even know it.
And we wouldn't even know it.
All right, we're going to take a break here. Amy is on the board. I'll get you on the air right after this break. Our phone lines are open. If you've got a question or comment for Dr. Peter Hotez about vaccines, about public health, attacks on science and scientists and researchers, the number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR Talk. The source continues right after this. On Texas Public Radio, I'm David Martin Davies. In the second half hour, we're going to be talking to leaders of COP Metro Alliance, talking about what they have done for the city of San Antonio, fighting for the working class, for neighborhoods that have been overlooked for so long. And now they're taking on a new fight about two new sports arenas and possibly to be built in downtown San Antonio, trying to keep public dollars out of that mix. But right now, we're talking about the attacks on science. Dr. Peter Hotez is with us. He's a well-known pediatrician. He makes vaccines. He's an advocate for science and public health. His latest book is The Deadly Rise of Anti-Science. Let's go to a caller, and we have Amy with us. And Amy, you're on the air. Go ahead, Amy. Hi, Amy. You there? Well, I guess not. So we'll see what happens on that. So why do you think that we have this issue? Do you think that social media and the spread of medical disinformation, it's so easy to be disinformed that's why we're having a lot of the problems that we're having right now?
Well, social media is part of it, but not the only thing. I mean, let's look at what happened during the COVID pandemic. COVID vaccines, the estimates are that COVID from Alison Galvani's group at Yale, COVID vaccines, the mRNA vaccines, saved 3 million American lives during the pandemic. So instead of 1.2 million deaths, we would have had 4.2 million deaths. I mean, 1.2 million is bad enough. Can imagine multiplying that by three or four times, how horrific that would have looked like. And despite their success, the fact that they were 90% protective against severe illness and death during the Delta and BA1 Omicron waves, when the vaccines were rolled out in 2021, the estimates are that 40,000 Texans needlessly died because they refused COVID vaccines. So of the 100,000 deaths in Texas, almost half came out after vaccines became available because so many Texans refused a COVID vaccine. And it wasn't due to misinformation or infodemic, meaning it wasn't random junk out there on the internet or social media. It was organized, it was deliberate, it was a predatory movement. They were victims of a predatory movement. So it started as the Delta wave was unfolding. This was documented by two groups, Media Matters, a watchdog group, and a research group out of the Federal University of Science and Technology in Switzerland. Tucker Carlson, Laura Ingraham, Sean Hannity, the nighttime Fox News broadcasters reaching 3 million viewers a night, filled their broadcast with anti-vaccine content. So what happened was, in their zeal to push back against vaccine mandates, which you could kind of understand, what they did was went the next measure and falsely discredited the effectiveness and safety of vaccines. This happened at the CPAC Conference of Conservatives in Dallas in 2021. There was an Esquire article called "They Clapped at Death for COVID." What they did was they brought on all the most aggressive, toxic anti-vaccine activists to falsely discredit the effectiveness and safety of vaccine. And then you had members of Congress. You had people like Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia calling people like me medical brown shirts, comparing vaccines to the Holocaust, or Senator Rand Paul or Ron Johnson holding phony baloney vaccine injury roundtables. So this was a whole ecosystem, so that if you were watching Fox News every night and then you had Joe Rogan bring on all the anti-vaccine activists in the last half of 2021, you kind of went down that rabbit hole, and based on what you were hearing and listening to and watching, you made a decision not to get vaccinated. And 40 to 50,000 Texans paid for that with their lives, 200,000 Americans overall. And unfortunately now, that's accelerating to other things. It's accelerating to all childhood immunizations. Now we're seeing declines in that. That's explaining the rise of measles and pertussis. It gets to House hearings that are falsely blaming COVID on lab leak or gain of function, when we have six published papers in the best journals on the zoonotic origins of COVID, which is also known as SARS-2. It came from animals, just like the original SARS did. So there is a disinformation empire out there. And unfortunately, it's targeting two areas of science. It's targeting climate change, and that's been around for about a decade. And it's also targeting biomedical science, specifically virology and infectious diseases. And so much so that I've teamed up now with the climate scientist Michael Mann at the University of Pennsylvania, who's been targeted like I've been targeted. And we're writing a new book together that compares and contrasts the two. It's called Science Under Siege. And that'll be
Well, who benefits by attacking public health, by attacking vaccines? You know, vaccines save lives. That is a true statement. That is something that is unassailably true, but yet it is attacked.
In some cases, it's fairly obvious and concrete. In other cases, it's a bit squishy. So, for instance, we know we have anti-vaccine groups that are monetizing the internet. They're selling phony autism cures. The nutritional supplement business, a lot of the most aggressive anti-vaccine activists have nutritional supplement companies, or they're selling ivermectin, or they're selling telemedicine visits that they'll charge you $1,000 or whatever and then give you a prescription of ivermectin, so which does absolutely nothing for COVID-19. So in some cases, they're making money. In other cases, they're getting donation dollars because by forming these groups. In other cases, it's a form of political control to rally the base. And we've seen this with other authoritarian-like regimes. This is what Stalin did during the 20s and 30s with the Great Purge. They target the intelligentsia. They target the scientists to portray them as public enemies or enemies of the state. So something like that, I think, is going on as well.
But at the foundation, there is a crisis of trust in America. Many of these people they don't trust the establishment. They don't trust the elites, and they see the science as a product of our elite system. People who are highly educated, people who went to school and got these degrees, these fancy degrees.
Yeah, no question that's a part of it. But the other flip side of that is it's also part of the disinformation campaign to tell these people that it's the elites that are causing this. Whereas in fact, I mean, where was Robert F. Kennedy trained, right? He's Harvard trained, right?
And, I mean, talk about the elite of the elite.
And Governor DeSantis is a
Yale graduate. He's
from
America's royal family.
Yeah, I mean, Ron DeSantis, would target me and as an elite. And here he is, a Yale grad, as an undergraduate like I was, and he went to Harvard Law School. Or Laura Ingraham from Dartmouth College and University of Virginia Law School. So it's a lot of phony stuff going on.
So, but you did go on Joe Rogan, mm-hmm. and you talked to him about this, and he presents himself as a curious everyman who wants to find things out. He's asking questions. And what was that like?
Well, it started out fine. I was on twice. I enjoyed the interaction. In fact, he even had he does stand-up comedy, and he came to Houston after that to the Toyota Center. I brought my son, youngest son, met him. We had a great time, and that was all good. And then he really went down this new, I call it rabbit hole. I guess there's probably a better term for it, but in the last half of 2021.
It's a rabbit hutch.
Started pushing ivermectin, which does nothing for COVID, and railing against COVID vaccines. And at that time, I tried to convince him to have me back on the show to set the record straight on what's going on with vaccines, but he wasn't interested.
Well, he wanted you to debate Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Yeah, then in 2023, he wanted me to debate Robert F. Kennedy Jr., which I wasn't going to do. And I wasn't going to do one because I knew it wouldn't be productive because I'd had long discussions with him in 2017, and he doesn't care about the science. He's not interested in the science. I also didn't want to help his candidacy at the time he was running for president. But there was another reason, which is I thought it sent the wrong message of how we do science, right? I mean, we have a way of doing science that's very effective and proven in terms of making discoveries, right? We write our scientific papers. They get peer-reviewed. They get revised, sometimes multiple times. We present our findings in front of scientific audiences at conferences. We apply for competitive grants that are reviewed by our peers. The system works. We don't debate science, especially with someone who has no scientific knowledge. I mean, I get you can debate 18th century Enlightenment philosophy. I get you can debate politics, but that's not how we do science. I can't think of a single example where science was advanced through debate.
Right, but the question we have is how is this hitting the ears of the public? And the public, they're voting on what to believe and what we ought to be doing. And because Robert F. Kennedy Jr., somehow he's a effective communicator on this issue, or he has a base, and so now he's in a position where he could do actual harm to public health in America, and the science be damned. So what went wrong?
Yeah, why did someone like that, acquire so much power through disinformation? And by the way, he's not the only one. Others are doing this as well. And And, you know, how do we push back against it?
How do we protect ourselves?
Yeah, and, you know, and I talk a lot with my scientific colleagues, and the emphasis is always about, well, we, you know, have to continue to put out correct information. And I get that. Sure, we do, but we don't have that same bandwidth. And it's getting increasingly difficult to counter the disinformation. So, for instance, you know, we had the Florida Surgeon General, Latipo, you know, came out and talked about mRNA vaccines causing turbo cancers, modifying our DNA causing turbo cancer, right? And that went viral very quickly. So I did what I could. I wound up going on MSNBC, I think it was, which, again, I get it's preaching to the converted, but at least it's getting out there a little bit. And for what do I say? Well, first of all, there's no such thing as a turbo cancer, right? That's a made-up term. It doesn't exist. There are no turbo cancers. Second, mRNA, you introduce a lipid nanoparticle to get it through the cell membrane. Yeah, but it doesn't go through the nuclear membrane. For that, you need electroporation. So it's not like it's even getting into our nucleus. And third, we have proteins in our innate immune system that prevent the integration of foreign DNA into our genome. Otherwise, every time we ate a hamburger, we'd be having cow DNA and being inserted into our genome. But that takes time, right? And it's not a 30-second soundbite usually. And by that time, you know, the turbo cancer stuff is all over the internet. So, you know, they've got the advantage.
So do you think that if people were aware that having Robert F. Kennedy Jr. as in this position, I mean, he's got to get through confirmation. He has a really checkered past, to put it lightly. Could public outrage do anything?
I don't know. This has a lot of momentum. And again, it's not just Kennedy. You've got the agency appointments also, which were, you know, Fox News talking heads who also put out a lot of disinformation. So I think we're in for a really tough time, you know, over the next few years.
So does that mean we're going to have real issues with people who are going to deal with conditions, diseases? I mean, we have a bird flu out there. Who knows what's coming around the corner? If we're not prepared with a robust response immediately, these things get out of hand quickly.
Here's why we have to care, and I think you hit on it, right? I mean, we've got a lot of big pandemic threats coming down the pike. We have we're still not done with COVID. That's still with us. But not only that, remember COVID or SARS-2 was the second SARS. We're likely having a third SARS brewing out there in bats in Asia. So we're going to have to contend with that. We have H5N1, which is now we've had 57 human cases. That's probably going to continue to accelerate. That could be a big
threat.
And
it's in raw milk.
Yeah, and it's in raw milk, and that's a whole other story. And then you've got the mosquito-transmitted virus infections down here in Texas and the Gulf Coast. The expectation is dengue's going to accelerate. We could have yellow fever come back. Zika is going to come back. And we're not done. Then we've also got all the vaccine-preventable diseases that are rising.
Preventable is the key word here. We could be entering an era of so many preventable tragedies here we are. And what can we do about it? Well, Dr. Peter Hotez, thank you so much for coming on board today and talking to us. And good luck to you and everything that you do. And we were rooting for you. We support you. We always say that we are pro-science on Texas Public Radio, so we will continue to be pro-science. Appreciate that.
Thanks so much for having me.
And when The Source continues, we're going to be talking with Cops Metro about their history of victories fighting for the working class of San Antonio and where they are now with two proposed sports stadiums for downtown. Stay with us.